This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
And the Sefer opens off by listing the requirements of the Mishkan, what is needed by the Mishkan. We're told firstly, Daber b'nei Yisrael, speak to the b'nei Yisrael, the yikhu li truma, and they must take from me a truma. Ma'es kol ish asher yidvenu liboy, tikhu es trumasi. From every man, whose heart motivates him to give, should give a truma, should give a donation to the Beis HaMikdash. V'zois ha-truma asher tikhu me'itom. This is the truma which you must take from there. Zahav v'cheset v'necheshes. Gold, silver, copper. Seems to be going down in descending order of value. Cheles agomen to la'ashoni shesh izim oiret elim adomim oiret techoshim v'atzei shittim. It goes right through down to leather and wood. Shemen la'moir, oil, v'somim l'shemen ha'mishcho v'liktores hasamim. And finally, avnei shoham v'avnei miluim la'ifed v'lacheshim. Precious stones for the ephod and for the choshim. Also li mikdash v'shulchanti b'seichom, and then make for me a mikdash and I will dwell among them. The question that we're going to deal with this evening is why the precious stones are brought lost. Surely the place to bring them is either before or immediately after the gold and silver. Gold, silver, copper, the chelet, and all the other kinds of dyes and the materials, the leather, wood, oil, spices, and then precious stones. Why do they come lost? The answer, I think, is hinted at by Rashi. When Rashi tells us what the ephod and the choshen are, he says, Avnei ha-shoham la-ephod. The avnei shoham are required for the ephod. The avnei ha-miluim la-choshen. And the avnei miluim are required for the choshen. What is a choshen and ephod? The choshen the ephod mefuroshim bevata tzovet. And what choshen and ephod are, that you will find explained in tzovet further on. But what you need to know now is vehem minei tachshit. You need to know now that they are decorative clothes. They're, it's a form of decoration. It's all Rashi tells us at this point, because you don't need to know anything more than that. The details of what the ephod and the choshen are going to be explained further on. At this point, all you need to know is that it's a minei tachshit, that it's a type of decoration. And that would seem to explain why it's put lost. First, all the things which are essentials are given. The gold and the silver and the copper were all used for the mizbeach and for the menorah, and the wood was used for the shulchan, and the leather was used for the sides of the mishkan, and the materials were used for the coverings of the mishkan. All that was for the essential mishkan. The stones were only for aesthetic reasons. And since they were only for aesthetic reasons, they put their lost. The Orach Chaim asks that question, and he gives an answer very similar to the one that I've just given to you. I'm not going to go into the differences between his answer and this answer, because they're minor, and for the sake of our discussions, it's not necessary. So he gives basically the same answer as we've just given, that the Avnei Shoham and the Avnei Miluim were not part of the essential Mishkan to the same degree that the others were. They were there for decorative purposes, not for essential requirements. And he gives two other answers as well, which are fascinating. The first answer he gives is, based on a Rashi further on in Vayakel, Chazal, which Rashi bases himself on, it says, "V'hanetziim heviu es avnei hashoam ve'es avnei hamiluim." These precious stones were donated not by ordinary people, but these precious stones were donated by the Nesim, by the leaders of each tribe, each Nasi. Gave some precious stones. So these were very special stones altogether, and they were given by very special people, which makes it even more difficult to understand why they should be mentioned lost. And Nesim is spelt a funny way. It's spelt without a yud. Spelt Nesim Aleph Mem without a yud at the end. Says Rashi, Omer Rabbi Noson, says Rabbi Noson, Ma ro Nesim li yisnadeh b'chanukas ha-mizbeach b'tchilo v'mlefes ha-mishkan lo yisnadvu b'tchilo elas lo yisnadvu b'tchilo. What did the Nesim see in that when it came to giving donations for the sacrifices, for the korbanos, they were the first there to give their sacrifice, to give their donations. But when it came to the Beis HaMikdash, they were the last. What was the reason? answers Rabbi Nosson, Ela kach omru Nesim. This is what the Nesim reckoned. Yisnadvu tzibur mashim yisnadvin, umashim mechatzim manu mashlim inoysom. Let the community donate whatever they can, and whatever's missing we'll make good. We underwrite that the Mishkan will have whatever it needs. Let them give, and whatever is lacking at the end of it, we'll fulfill. Seems a magnificent gesture. Kivan sheishlimu tzibur es hakol, once the community had done everything, shenemar, as it says, v'hamlocha ha'isa dayom, the work was all over, omru nesim, ma'aleinu la'asos, now what do we do? Hevirus avne hashoim, they brought the precious stone. They put the finishing touches, the decoration. Lekach hisnadvu b'chanukas ha'mizbeach t'chila. Therefore, when it came to donating for the mizbeach, they gave first. There's Rashi. Ulefishin is atzlu mitchilo, and since they were a little bit lazy when it came to this first donation, the donation to the Mishkan, nechzara ois mishman, one letter was taken out of their name. V'hanesiim ketiv, and it says nesiim without a yud. That's the Rashi. So that's the one answer that Or HaChaim gives. Why were the Avnei Shoham and Avnei Miluim mentioned last year? Because they were donated last. The second answer he gives, or rather the third answer he gives, is based on the Gemara in Yuma. The Gemara says a fascinating thing. Omer Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmeni, Omer Rabbi Yonasan. This is a Gemara in Yuma, Daf Ayin Hayamud Aleph, 75a. Medaber sheyorod lohem baboike baboike melamed sheyorod lohem Yisrael avonim toivus umargolius im haman. We see from this, we won't get into how the Gemara learns it out, that when the mon came down, together with the mon came all sorts of precious stones. V'hanesiim hevirus avnei hashoyim. It says, and the nesiim brought the precious stones. Tana nesiim mamash. Read it nesiim mamash, and nesiim could also mean cloud. Gemara says that doesn't mean that the Nesim brought the precious stones, it means the clouds brought the precious stones. The way the Or HaChaim seems to take that Gemara is not literally that the clouds brought it, but the clouds brought it to the Nesim. They found these precious stones miraculously at their doorstep when they went out to collect them on. And it was those precious stones which they brought to bring to the Beit HaMikdash. So one might think that all the more reason that they should be precious, that that should be a precious donation and should be mentioned first. But no, it says, Or HaChaim, kivan sheloi torchu. They didn't have to work for those stones. And since they didn't have to work for those stones, it was mentioned last. So three answers the Or HaChaim says as to why the Avnei Shoham are mentioned last. The first is because they're merely aesthetic, they're decorative. The second is because it was given by the Nesim late. And the third is because the stones they gave, they didn't have to work for. They were given to them for nothing. It's very difficult to understand. The basic difficulty is I can understand the first answer that we did, that we pointed out from Rashi. But the other two answers all depend and all revolve around the fact as to how and what and who gave these precious stones. But at this point in the Torah, the precious stones haven't been given yet. At this stage, the Torah is merely listing what is needed. And we don't yet know that the Nesim are going to give them. We don't yet know that the Nesim are going to give them late. We don't yet know that they're going to use the stones which they happened to find when they found them on. So how can the Or HaChaim say that the reason that the Torah lists the Avnei Shoham and the Avnei Miluim last is because that's what was given last, or because they didn't have to work? We don't know any of that yet. And if you'll say that the Ribbono Shel Olam knew, then we come back to the old question, so the Nesiim had no free choice and all that kind of business. And that's not very likely that's why it would have been put in last. So we have to understand the Or HaChaim. Furthermore, what's the terrible thing? So they didn't work for the stones, but they gave the stones. Why should they be mentioned last because they didn't work for them? On the contrary, why did they get the stones and other people didn't? Because they were tzaddikim. Because they were outstanding, special men. The Ribbono Shel Olam comes and puts stones, precious stones, at their doorsteps. Surely that's all the more reason that they should be mentioned first. And furthermore, okay, they didn't work for those precious stones, but the sentimental value of those precious stones? To take something that the Ribbono Shel Olam himself gave them miraculously and to donate it to the Beis HaMikdash, that's a wonderful thing. Is that a reason to mention them last? What are the requirements of this donation? Last week we did the concept of the shekolim, where it was fixed that each person gave half a shekel, everybody. That was one form of donation. It wasn't only to count the people, it was a form of donation to the Beis HaMikdash as well. What's the shiur here? No shiur at all.
Not everybody has to give. You're not obligated to give. Nor do we care how much each person gives. It's up to each individual to give what he wants, if he wants. That means that in this particular instance, the Torah is absolutely disinterested in the quantity. It's unimportant how much you give. It's not mentioned. Nobody's praised for giving a lot. Nobody's scolded for giving nothing. There's no mention made of it, whatever. It's absolutely unimportant how much. So what is important?
Two things. The first one is Dabera b'nei Yisrael v'yikhu li teruma. Says Rashi, li means lishmi. Li is not just a statement of fact that you must give the truma to me. Li is a value. When you give the truma, it's got to be l'shem shemayim.
There must be no other reason mixed in to your donation. No personal gratification that you intend to get out of it. No other motivation. Nothing whatever. It has to be lishmi. It has to be pure. That's the first condition for the giving of the truma. We don't care how much. Let it be 1 cent. Let it be nothing. But if you give, and even if it's only 1 cent, it has to be lishmi. It's got to be to my name. The second one, mikol ish asher yidvenu libo. From anybody who is giving from his heart, that's what we need. Not how much, that's unimportant. But what we need is that it's from his heart. Giving from the heart means that you're giving something of yourself. It means that you're giving your heart. Not just that you've got something and you give it to somebody else. Giving asher yidvenu libo means that when you're giving of yourself, not of your money. And that's what we want. We don't want 1 cent from anybody. We want their heart. We want them, not their money. And the Mishkan is a living embodiment of their hearts, of the Mesiris Nefesh of those people. And these are the two requirements for Mesiris Nefesh. Mesiris Nefesh needs two things. Number one, you've got to be doing it for someone else. Mesiris Nefesh for yourself is a contradiction in terms. Mesiris Nefesh means you're giving your life. Doesn't mean literally that you're dying for it, but that you're not thinking of yourself at all. Mesiris Nefesh means with abandon. You do it with total irrational thought. There isn't thought. It's out of love that you just give everything you've got. You throw yourself into it, heart and soul. That's Mesiris Nefesh. Now, to do that for yourself is a contradiction in terms. People don't kill themselves. There's something wrong with you if you're Mesiris Nefesh for yourself. On the contrary, the opposite of Mesiris Nefesh is an inborn defense mechanism that the Ribbono Shel'olam has given to our bodies. We look after our natural instinct is to look after ourselves. Mesiris Nefesh is not to look after yourself. Why? Because you're not concerned about yourself. You're totally occupied in something which you consider bigger than yourself, more important than yourself. That's Mesiris Nefesh. And what do you need for Mesiris Nefesh? Lishmoy? It's got to be for the Ribbono Shel'olam, or for some cause, or for some person. If it's a mitzvah, it's got to be l'shem mitzvah. If it's a piece of Gemara, it must be l'shem Torah. You're totally involved in the piece of Gemara, not in you. And if it's for another person, you're doing a chesed, you're doing a kindness, and you've got to be involved, it's lishmoy, it's for that person, but not for you. The other is that it's yidvenu liboy, it's got to be yourself that's in it. Not that you're just taking something out of your pocket and giving it to somebody, that's not Mesiris Nefesh. Not that you're doing something that doesn't ache as you pull it apart. Mesiris Nefesh is that when you wrench it, it's literally a wrench, you're taking something of yourself, of your life, and you're giving it. So it doesn't mean all your life. Mesiris Nefesh doesn't mean necessarily that you kill yourself. But something of your life, yes. That it's something of you inside it, not that it's something of yours. It's got to be something of you. That's Mesiris Nefesh. And the importance of Mesiris Nefesh is paramount. Because if one is operating without Mesiris Nefesh, then it makes no difference what you're doing, but you're doing it not even on a spiritual level. It's not, never mind is it not a mitzvah, but it's not even a spiritual action. To do something without Mesiris Nefesh is the same as an animal, because if you're doing without Mesiris Nefesh, it means there's nothing of you in it, and it means you're not doing it for the other thing. So you're doing it for yourself, because you want to be seen that way. Mr. Greenfield, that was the point you made. Right? You're doing something, and you're doing it really for yourself. What is it for? You want to be seen doing it, you want the enjoyment of doing it, you want the Tovah Hanoah, you want the benefit of doing it. That's why you're doing it. Because if you were really doing it for something bigger than you, there would be Mesiris Nefesh. A little bit of Mesiris Nefesh. In everything one did, there would be a little bit of Mesiris Nefesh. And if there's no Mesiris Nefesh, that means there's nothing of you in it, and you're not doing it for anything else. So you're doing it for yourself. And you're not even on a spiritual level. The moment there's a touch of Mesiris Nefesh, just a little bit, what does that mean? Now I'm a human being. Because an animal can't be Mesiris Nefesh. An animal is not capable of being Mesiris Nefesh. An animal has only got its instinct of survival, its need to keep itself alive. An animal doesn't have the instinct of Mesiras Nefesh. The moment I do something with Mesiras Nefesh, I'm involved in something spiritual. That's something incredible. It makes no difference what I'm doing. A chesed, a mitzvah. I'm learning. I'm talking. I'm thinking. Whatever it is, if it's with Mesiras Nefesh, it's in the spiritual realm. If it's without Mesiras Nefesh, it's in the material realm. A man who's building his business with Mesiras Nefesh, what is that? Is he doing it for himself? It's not possible. It's against human nature that he should be Moser Nefesh to build a business for himself. He's doing it really and genuinely for his children, for his employees, for the community. There's a bit of that. Sure, there's profit in it as well. Sure, he wants the satisfaction as well. But there's a bit of spirituality in it. You have a man who puts on tefillin every morning and there's no Mesiras Nefesh in it. There's no spirituality in it. It's back to the old concept that you can't say this is a mitzvah, this is aveira. Depends how you do it. A man can be involved in business and because he's a tinuk shenishba, he doesn't know any better, he's never put on tefillin, he's never kept Shabbos, he's never kept kashrus. But what he does with Mesiras Nefesh. That's a spiritual human being. And you can talk to him about ruchnius. You can sit and talk to such a man about Torah. You can teach him, you can learn with him, you can discuss with him. If you have a man who puts on tefillin every morning and keeps kashrus and Shabbos and everything else, but without Mesiras Nefesh, you can't talk to him about Torah. He does it, so it's nice, it's frum. But you can't talk to him about spiritual things because he doesn't care about spiritual things. He doesn't know what they are. He's never experienced them. I mentioned this morning in shul that the Yiddishkeit in our base of Medrash is becoming pathetically stagnant. We're doing the Yiddishkeit nicely, but the Yiddishkeit is doing nothing for us. There's no growth in Yiddishkeit, with the exception of one or two individuals. We're doing it, so it's become a routine. What's lacking? Mesiras Nefesh. So you can have a situation where miraculously, within a few hours of saying such a thing, Ribbono Shel Olam brings down a cloudburst of rain. Here's an opportunity to come to Mincha with Mesiras Nefesh. So we struggle for a minyan. That's what it is. You don't care, it's just not important enough to put on a raincoat and walk in the rain. They'll have a minyan without me. Of course they'll have a minyan without you. We don't need you. If we don't have a minyan, we'll go to another shul. Nobody needs you. You need the Mesiras Nefesh. You need to get wet in the rain on the way to shul. You need to hurt yourself on the way to doing a mitzvah. You need to go without an hour's sleep in order to understand the Tosfos. You need to go without a meal in order to buy a sefer. Otherwise there's no Mesiras Nefesh. And you're involved in Yiddishkeit, all very nice. But it's without spirituality. Totally. Dead without spirituality. What a nice feeling it was when two young people walked into the base of Midrash, pouring with water. You know what a feeling that is? If it was for the rest of you, you would be standing still at Yom Suf. Because the Ribbono Shel Olam didn't split it until they were up to their chins in water. He didn't split it. When they were up to their chins in water and they couldn't go any further, then he split the Yom Suf. But if it was this kind of Yiddishkeit, so we won't get Eretz Yisrael. So we won't get the Torah. It's raining. It's wet. What are you supposed to do? Get wet. We've always put across the idea that being affluent is not a contradiction to Yiddishkeit. That one can live comfortably, one can live respectably, and one can achieve greatness in Yiddishkeit as well. And I believe that, and I have no doubt about that. That it's much harder, because if the roof is leaking at home, you might as well get a shoe when it's raining. But if one is comfortable at home, it's not that easy. If you've got 10 children in one room at home and there's a chance to go to a shiur, it's easier to go to the shiur, and when you come back the kids are sleeping. But if you've got a mansion and each room has his own each child has his own room and you don't hear them in any case, a shiur, television, go out to the movies, it's difficult already. To combat the complacency of comfort is hard. It can be done. And when it's done, the Torah is greater. But there's such a danger that affluence withdraws all the Mesiras Nefesh from Yiddishkeit. That comfort takes out every bit of Mesiras Nefesh. That's the danger. I remember as a child, I used to look at my father's sforim, and he had a fortune of sforim, and I used to know that each one of those that he bought while he was overseas, he bought at the expense of a meal. I didn't know what that was like. I'd never had it for the Hashem. But to know and to see how he treasured those sforim, and he remembered exactly which meal he went without for every sefer. I don't even remember when I bought my sforim. Well, if you got them, I can vaguely remember the year. I can work it out if you ask me. he remembers exactly, because he remembers the pain in his stomach when he went to buy a sefer. It was at the cost of a meal. That's Mesiras Nefesh. You relate differently to your sefer. It's spiritual. It's not just a possession. It's something which is yours. It's something which you've slaved for. Let's go a little bit further. What I want to show you now is, in order to answer the question we raised on the Or HaChaim, is that what the Or HaChaim in fact is saying is something much more vast. He's saying that inherent in the Avnei Shoyam and the Avnei Miluim, inherent in these precious stones, there is an element which is going to make it necessary that he who donates them will be giving less Lishmoy and less Yedvenu Liboy. It will be less for God, and it will be less with his heart. And that it's really, all those three answers are really one answer. That God knows at this stage whoever gives these things, there's going to be less Lishmoy, and there's going to be less Yedvenu Liboy, because that's all we care about. We don't care if they're late, if they're early. We don't care if they worked for them, if they didn't work for them. That's not one of the requirements in the Mishkan, is that you must work for what you give. There are only two requirements. It's got to be Lishmoy, it's got to be for the Ribbono Shel Olam, and it's Yedvenu Liboy, it's got to be your heart in it. That's all that we need. Everything else is okay. Let's go to the Rashi in Tetzaveh, where Rashi says, and this is now in Shmot, chapter 35, verse 27, that the Nesim said something which appears incredibly generous. We underwrite whatever the Beis HaMikdash needs, the Mishkan needs, we will give. And they're criticized for that. Rashi calls them lazy. We'll see in a moment why. There's a little bit of arrogance in that. There's a little bit of self-centeredness, a tiny, tiny little bit. Don't worry, we'll fix it up. You people give whatever you want, and we'll fix up the rest. Don't worry. It's okay. There's a little bit of me in it. Not that the Beis HaMikdash will be fixed, but we'll see that the Beis HaMikdash is complete. It's not 100% Lishmo. It's not 100% for nothing but the Ribbono Shel Olam. In order to get involved in something else, in order to work with Mesiras Nefesh, we said it's necessary to be totally involved in the thing. That means you have to identify with the needs of the receiver. If you're attending to someone, if you're relating to somebody, and you want to relate to him with Mesiras Nefesh, it's necessary to identify totally with his needs. When a man says, before that, and that's hard to identify with a man's needs, to know exactly what he needs, you've got to get into him. That is the old story. I think it was with Reb Chaim, when his gaboyim came and they said, look, we don't understand what you do all day. Why? We see that you change your suit I don't know how many times a day, and your voice sweating and as if you're working, as if you're a manual laborer. What do you do all day? And he told them, you think somebody comes to see me and it's all very easy. I sit on the one side of the desk and they sit on the other side of the desk and they tell me their story and I tell them what to do. And Reb Chaim, I think it was Reb Chaim, said, that's not what it is at all. When a person comes to me, I first of all got to get out of Reb Chaim's suit. And I've got to get into their suits to understand what they're telling me from their point of view, not from my point of view. That's irrelevant. And having lived through all their tzoras, having lived through their problem like they're living through it, then I have to get out of them again and back into myself and look at the thing objectively. That's physical labor. To do something lishmoy, to do something for the other person, or for the mitzvah, or for the Ribbono Shel Olam, requires such deep insight into what that other person needs, into what that other person is, into what the requirements are of that other person, where he's holding. Requires tremendous insight. And that the Nesiim didn't do. They said, look, when you're all finished, let us know what you need and we'll fix it up. We'll write out a check. No problem. Whatever you need, you'll get. But let us know. You do whatever you can and tell us what's missing. That's not the way to give. The way to give is you find out what's needed if it's going to be Lishmoy. You get involved in the Mishkan. Roll up your sleeves and go and work with them and you'll see what the Mishkan needs. And give what is needed, not the little things that come afterwards. And the Ribbono Shel Olam knew that the people who give the decorations are going to be the ones who didn't get involved in the needs of the Mishkan. They don't understand what it means to get involved in the needs of the Mishkan. It's like telling people to have cake when they need bread. The person is going to give the Mishkan jewels when you haven't got a Mizbeach and a Menorah and a Shulchan. That's a funny kind of person. So it's going to be the kind of person who doesn't go into the needs and waits till the end, and when there's something missing, which is likely to be the decorations. He'll supply the decoration. That the Ribbono Shel Olam knew would be the case, and the Nesiim fell into the trap. And Rashi calls it atzlus. He calls it laziness. It's emotional laziness. One mustn't think that laziness applies only to physical labor. One mustn't think that laziness applies only to intellect, to thinking. Those are two very important types of laziness. But there's another kind of atzlus, there's another kind of laziness, which is emotional laziness. Not taking the trouble to feel, because that's the hardest kind of work of all. To carry rocks up and down the mountain is hard. To learn a piece of Gemara without atzlus, to learn it with application and with zrizus, is harder even than carrying the rocks up and down the mountain. But emotional zrizus, to be prepared to climb into other people and all the time see what they need, feel their problems, understand them, that's so hard. That's so difficult. But that's what was needed. It was supposed to be lishmoy. You were supposed to respond to the needs of the Mishkan, not to the luxuries of the Mishkan. And they didn't do that. What's the other answer that the Or HaChaim gives? That they didn't work hard enough for it. It's amazing. What makes a thing yours? How do you acquire something? So one can acquire something legally. One can become a little bit attached to something. But how do you really make a thing yours to the extent that when you give it away, you've given something of you? If a painter sits and he works for months and months on a painting, and he lies awake at night, and he sweats and slaves and toils over it, and he changes this and he changes that, and every little detail in that paint is worked over and thought out carefully and slogged over. When that painter gives away that painting, whether he sells it or he gives it, there's something of his heart that goes into it. When a man writes a book, and he sits and he works and he writes and he scratches out and he rewrites again and day and night, on and on, when he gives that manuscript to his publisher, he's given a bit of himself away. That's not just his work, that's not just an object of his. That's he himself. That's him. Or HaChaim gives us a tremendous yesod, a tremendous principle here. And that is, in order for the requirement of Yidvenu Liboy, the second requirement, in order for a man to give of himself, what he's giving must have been him, not his, but him. How do you make it you? How do you make your possessions you? By Torah, by working over them. That's what you do. And this is actually a concept in Halacha, where the Gemara says, there's a Mishnah, Hamafkid Peiros Eitzel Chavero, Afilu Hein Avudim Lo Yigo Bohem. This is a Mishnah in Bova Metzia, Lamed Ches Amud Aleph, 38a. If a man gives fruit in safekeeping to his friend, and then he goes overseas, and the friend notices that the fruits are starting to rot, Lo Yigo Bohem. You don't touch them. You leave them to rot. Asks the Gemara, my timer. What's the reason? Omar Rav Kahana, answered Rav Kahana, Adam roitze bekav sheloi mitisho kovim shel chaveiro. Because a man would rather have one measure of his own than nine measures of somebody else. Not ten. Ten, one can already be bribed. But up to nine, rather have one of my own than nine of somebody else's. Says Rashi, chavivo alav. You know what chavivo is in Hebrew, chabibi. Dear, it's close to him. Al yedei she'omal bahem, because he toiled for it. It becomes beloved to one. One loves what one's toiled for. The kav she'yishaelo mehem, and the one measure that will remain to him of his rotting fruit that he worked for. Hu roitze mitisha kavim shelacherim, she'ikach bidmeim. He would rather have that than nine fresh measures of other produce that he could buy in the marketplace with the money that you could achieve by selling his rotten fruit. He would rather have one measure of his own fruit. So until it gets to that point where you could still save him one ninth of what you could get had you sold it, up to that point you have to leave it. The power of hard work. It's incredible. Why does a parent love a child more than a child loves a parent? Yes, sir. A parent loves a child more than a child loves a parent, just because of the work. What the parent puts into the child, the omal, the Torah, the hard work, the sleepless nights, the effort, the money, the thought, the planning. You can't but love someone for whom you've done all that. It's just not possible. Even money, even physical material things, you develop an emotional love for, an attachment to. if you've worked for it, how much more so for another human being? Rabbi Chaim Shmuel Levitz, the Rosh Yeshiva of Meir Zatzal, used to use this to explain a Gemara which I brought you a few weeks ago and explained slightly differently. The Gemara says a strange thing in Sota. Tzadikim chavivim aleihem mamoinam yoseh migufam. Tzadikim love their money more than themselves. If neisha ain't poishtim yedeihem begezel, because they don't steal. What does that mean, says Rabbi Chaim Shmuel Levitz? The effort and work that they go to make sure that not one penny of theirs is not stolen. That means that not one penny of theirs is not theirs by right. That they haven't taken advantage of anybody. That they haven't misled anybody. All that work and effort, and therefore they have to work much harder because they have to give back an awful lot. The Chofetz Chaim could never make it as a businessman. He opened one business after another because he was determined not to take a living from Rabbonis or from anything like that. He was determined to get a living independently. And one business after another failed. Because if he noticed that there was a little bit of flour on his scale, this actually happened. He noticed there was a bit of flour on his scale, stuck to the side of his scale. That means everybody he gave something to, he gave a little bit less than they really paid for. And he didn't know when the flour was there. He didn't know who'd suffered. So he went to everybody who'd been into his shop, and he gave them back an appropriate amount. And then he found that there was one shiksa, there was one non-Jewish woman from another town. And he didn't know her name. He just knew where she came from. And he couldn't find her. So he sent a messenger to deliver that amount to every inhabitant of that town. So that there shouldn't be anybody who got less than they actually paid for. It was the Chofetz Chaim, so he never succeeded in business. It's over and over again this kind of thing happened. But when you're like that, you've got to work that much harder. Because if you're going to earn money which is absolutely naki, money which is absolutely clean, the harder you need to work. And having worked that hard for one's money, one becomes very attached to it. One becomes very close to it. Tzadikim chavivim aleihem amoinam yoseh migufam. They are bigger materialists. Tzadikim love their money more than other people love it. They appreciate material things more than the secular man appreciates material things, because they work harder for their material things. And it's through the effort and the work that goes into something that the emotional attachment develops. Okay. The Nassim didn't work for their gems. How hard did everybody else work for their gold and silver? Where did these slaves coming out of Egypt get gold and silver and copper? Some of them got it from their neighbors when they left Mitzrayim, and some they must have picked up at Yam Suf when they were standing there at Yam Suf at the Red Sea after the Egyptians were drowned. They were picking up the spoil that was washed up onto the side of the sea. So how hard did they work to get it? Why are the Nassim any worse than anybody else? They had to work a little bit harder. That's it. Just a little bit harder. Not much harder. They didn't have to slave for it. They also picked it up. But they had to go out and collect it at least. They had to go to their neighbors and ask for it. They had to sit at Yam Suf and pick it up. They had to do something. We're told in the Gemara in Yuma that in the case of the Tzadikim, it was delivered to their doorstep. They didn't have to do anything at all. You see how even a slight, little, tiny bit of extra work makes a difference in one's relationship to the object to the extent that it's recorded in the Torah. What's the concept? It's not, there was less yidvenu libo because of that little bit less work. When they gave it, there was a little bit of less of themselves actually being given, but enough to be registered last on the list. One has such a concept as well. There's a Gemara in Chagiga which I've brought you before, where the Gemara says in Chagiga daf Tes Amud Beis 9b, my dichtiv, what does it say in Malachi? What does the pasuk mean? It says, and you'll see in the days to come the difference between a tzaddik and a rosho, between he who served the Ribbono Shel Olam and he who didn't. Ask the Gemara, Hainu tzaddik, Hainu oved Elokim, Hainu rosho, Hainu asher lo yavodah. A tzaddik is somebody who served God, and a rosho is somebody who didn't. So what is it? Why is the repetition? You will see the difference between a tzaddik and a rosho, between somebody who worked for the Ribbono Shel Olam and somebody who didn't. Amale, so he answered him. Avodoi v'loy avodoi tarvayu tzadiki gomu. The second part of the posuk is talking about two tzadikim. First we have tzadik and rosha. Now put the rosha aside and take the tzadik. Now we're talking about two kinds of tzadik. A tzadik who served the Ribbono Shel Olam and a tzadik who didn't serve the Ribbono Shel Olam. What's the difference? You can't compare the man who's learnt his Gemara 100 times to the one who's learnt it 101 times. That one is not just a difference of one. That one is extra work. It's extra amal. And it's much harder to learn your Gemara the first time. You're at least enthused, you're assisted by curiosity. You want to know what the Gemara says. You learn it a second time and a third time and a fourth time. You still have the desire to know it well. But when you've learned your Gemara 100 times, believe me, you know your Gemara well. So what's the 101 times for? A little bit more effort. Just, it's so much more effort to do it that 101 time than to do it any of the previous times. To learn your Gemara even when you know it is so hard. To learn your Gemara when you don't know it is relatively easy. But when you know it and you're sure you know it, to go over it still another time, just to work still more at it, that's a professional. That's the difference between a professional and an amateur. An amateur likes to get the feeling of turning pages. He likes to say, I've learned so many mesechtas, I've learned this in the sugya, I've learned this, I've learned that. What he knows is not terribly important. Yes, he would like to know sufficient to be able to quote. But really to understand and to know with absolute certainty, that's not all that important. The professional is a man who even after he's learned 100 times, will still learn 101 times, and 102, and 103. That's a lifetime's occupation, on and on and on. It's Mesiris Nefesh. He gives his life for it, because that's what you need to learn at that 101st time. After you've done it 100 times, to do it 101 times, you need Mesiris Nefesh. That's Midvas Libo, that's something you're working for. But you see the concept that for a little bit extra, look at the difference. The one is called an Oved Hashem, and the one is not called an Oved Hashem. A difference in stature, a difference in type of human being. That's how far the Torah is prepared to go, to distinguish between somebody who puts in that little bit of extra work and somebody who doesn't. So certainly the Nasiyim who put in no work whatever are on a much lower level of giving than the other Jews who at least had to go and find, at least they had to go and collect, they had to do something. There was a little bit of work involved. So what do we come to? That the stones, because of their nature, what are the stones? They're decoration. Because the stones are decorative, two things must emerge. Number one is the person who gives them is going to be somebody who has not responded to the needs of the Beis HaMikdash. That's it. If you have a very poor person, as we said, you have an oni comes to you and wants something to eat, he wants a meal, to give him something which is terribly useless but very beautiful, is not responding to his needs. It's very nice, it's a gift, certainly a nice action, it's a chesed, but it's not response. You're not living with him, you haven't felt his problem, you haven't adjusted to him, you haven't climbed into his tzoras at all. One has to give him what he needs. And the other thing is, that if one's talking about these kind of exotic stones, the person who's giving them, where did he get them from? You don't buy exotic stones with the money you really work hard for. The money you work hard for, you live on. And when you've got enough to live on and enough to put away, then you don't carry on working hard, then you stop working for the rest of the day and you sit and you learn. So where does somebody get precious stones from? They must have been given to him. Nobody works to collect jewels. Jewels are gifts. That means that not only is the person who's going to give these jewels somebody who's going to give without lishmoy, it's not going to be adjusting to the needs of the Mishkan, but it's also going to be given without yidvenu liboy. When they give those jewels, they're not going to be wrenching it out of their hearts, because it was never in their hearts. It was something they were given, not something they worked for. And therefore, by definition, the donor of the jewels is going to be somebody who qualifies least of all for the two requirements. For li, for lishmi, in my name, and for yidvenu liboy, that it's got to be given by the heart. And we learn from here an incredible principle. That is, that for a thing to be Mesiris Nefesh, you can't be Mosa Nefesh for decoration. That's what we learn from here. It's really as simple as that. You can't be Mosa Nefesh for decoration. You can only be Mosa Nefesh for something which is needed. Managers say that one's priorities in the day can be divided into different... So if you sit down at the beginning of the day and you divide up your priorities, you can classify them into different classes. And one of the classifications they make is the following. You have some things which are urgent and important. Those things will be done without any question. You have some things which are urgent but unimportant. Those things will also be done. You have some things which are not urgent and not important. Those things won't be done. And you have some things which are not urgent but are important, and they also won't be done. Because one's only motivated to do something with Mesiris Nefesh, and when a person's under pressure, it's Mesiris Nefesh.
only when you understand the urgency of it. Importance is not enough. Decoration might be important, but you're not Moisa Nefesh for something important. You're Moisa Nefesh for something urgent. Urgent and important. And for a decoration, you can't be Moisa Nefesh. Comes the question, if one realizes, as we started off by saying, that without Mesiris Nefesh, we're not involved in Yiddishkeit. Without Mesiris Nefesh, we're not involved in anything spiritual at all. Without Mesiris Nefesh, we're involved in ourselves, in fact. To some more or less glorified extent. Mesiris Nefesh means that you're totally involved in the other thing. To stand and daven, and have your eyes roaming around, and looking at what's going on, and noticing people walking in and out, that's not davening with Mesiris Nefesh. That's not even davening Lishmo, you're not even davening to the Ribbono Shloram, you're just saying things, it's nothing. And to daven even properly, but without pouring out your heart in that davening. That when you come out of it, your heart is sore, literally you've got a pain in your chest. It's also not Mesiris Nefesh in the davening. So you've gone through the routine of the davening. To go through a Shabbos where you haven't been Mesiris Nefesh for the Shabbos. Some people, Mesiris Nefesh is to close their shop. Have a retailer who could earn on Shabbos as much as he works during the week, and he closes his shop on Shabbos, Erev Shabbos, that's Mesiris Nefesh. But most of us aren't in that position. We don't make any more or less by not working on Shabbos. So where's the Mesiris Nefesh? So we have to buy something special for Shabbos. But not buy something with money that's like the pearls, like these precious jewels that we're talking. Money that doesn't make any difference either way. Buy something special with money that does burn a little bit of a hole in one's pocket. Go a little bit further than one would normally go. Or one invites guests. Not just invite guests in a way that it doesn't make any difference if you've got them or you haven't got them. But guests where there can be Mesiris Nefesh because it costs you more than you can really afford. Or because in time and energy, what you put into making those guests feel comfortable and at home leaves you drained afterwards. It makes you tired at the end of it. There's a bit of Mesiris Nefesh into a Shabbos. And if not that, then at least sitting around the table, seeing mirrors in a way that the roof can come off. A bit of Mesiris Nefesh. There's something in the Shabbos. Saying one's Kiddush with understanding, with dedication. There's something in the Shabbos. But just to go through all these pathetic Shabbos in one after the other, doing nothing with Mesiris Nefesh, that's not Shmiras Shabbos. That's not keeping Shabbos. Because keeping Shabbos is meant to be something spiritual. Kashrus. Just to get into a routine of kashrus without caring, without concerning, without sometimes going without because you're worried, maybe it's not kosher. That's not kashrus with Mesiris Nefesh. Einodim lechaveira. To talk Lashon Hora whenever one feels like talking Lashon Hora, that's not Mesiris Nefesh. Mesiris Nefesh is to hold it back and hold it back, and it hurts when you hold it back. But that's Mesiris Nefesh. Chesed is not just saying hello to somebody and won't you come around sometime. Mesiris Nefesh is noticing what that person needs, climbing into him. Every person is crying out. Every one of us has needs. There's nobody here who doesn't have any needs, that doesn't have any tzoros at all, that doesn't have any problems. We all think that we're the only ones with problems and everybody else is alright. It's not like that. Every single one of us has major problems. You can't imagine what problems each one of us has. And each one of us are sure that the other guy's problems aren't as bad as mine. And sometimes they're right and sometimes they're wrong. But in relation to each person's abilities, we all have massive problems. Be'nodem l'chaveiro means to notice that. To climb into the other person and find out what's wrong, what's the problem, what can I do? And even if you can do nothing, don't turn off. Don't become completely apathetic. I don't have the resources, I don't have the financial resources to help you, or I don't even have the emotional resources to help you. Still, I can be concerned about you. Just to turn off and not to feel anything at all. There's no Mesiris Nefesh. That's not spiritual interpersonal relationship. The problem with us all is that we regard our Yiddishkeit as a decoration. We've got our lives, and we've got our jobs, and we've got our work, and we've got our family, and we've got our friends. And Yiddishkeit is a nice decoration. Shabbos, Kashrus, all the nice traditions, Yom Tov, we learn a bit of Gemara, we come to some Shiurim, we understand, it's all fun, it's all very nice, and we're prepared to put a bit of effort into it, the same as we're prepared to put effort into painting our houses. Nobody wants to live in an ugly house, and no one wants to have a boring and ugly life. So we're prepared to paint it up a little bit with some Yiddishkeit, with something that is apparently spiritual. But there's no Mesiris Nefesh because we consider it a decoration. It's not a decoration.
And we've got to get this out of our minds that it's not a decoration. Because as long as we see that Yiddishkeit as decoration, there's never going to be any Mesilas Nefesh. Until we see Shabbos as essential, until we see understanding a sugi of Gemara as essential, as understanding a piece of Chumash as life and death, until we see keeping a Yom Tov properly, until we see Chesed, not talking Lashon Hora, Hachnasas Orchim, having guests, relating to them properly, until one sees that as life and death, I'm an animal without it. Not I'm a bad human being. I'm an animal without it. Until one sees that clearly, and this is no decoration. It's not that I get a medal if I do Achnasas Ochim and without it I'm without a medal. I get a medal if I'm a Baal Chesed or a Baal Tzedakah and without it I don't have a medal. Without Chesed and Tzedakah and Shabbos and Kashrus and Torah, there's nothing. And until one sees that and knocks that into one's brain, there's not going to be a Mesilas Nefesh. Raining, no mincha. Sure, there's a mincha. We daven at home. Even get together a minyan at home. Doesn't matter. That's not how Torah operates. What do we have? We don't have a mishkan today. So where's our area for Mesilas Nefesh? Sometimes institutions are built, yeshivas, shuls, schools. That's one area of Mesilas Nefesh. We here in this base of Medrash are busy in building people, not building institutions. Not interested in building institutions. Building people. But the people who are involved in the space of Medrash should be getting bigger. And that needs Mesilas Nefesh. Not just from the people who are growing, but much more important from one another. And unless each one of us realizes that we are responsible for the growth of our friends, and that we've got to be Mesilas Nefesh for that growth, because that's our Mishkan. Putting Torah into people and seeing the growth that comes out as a result of that, that's our Mishkan. And it's no good just to come to the base of Medrash to get, when it suits, when it's convenient. When it's a bit inconvenient, we don't turn up at all. That's not a base of Medrash, and that's not learning Torah. Learning Torah is understanding that I have a commitment to every other person in that base of Medrash, to all my chaverim, to everybody else who sits around that table and is learning Torah. I have an obligation, not me a rov, but me sitting around the table has an obligation to see that everybody else understands the Gemara. And I've got to also slave and help him. And if the one next to me doesn't understand as fast, I've got to help him understand, and I've got to spend time and be Mesilas Nefesh to see that he does. And if there's somebody who doesn't understand how to apply a principle, and I see that he's living a stagnant life, he's continuing his learning and learning, and he's not changing his lifestyle, I, as a chaver of his, as a friend of his, have an obligation to see that I can help him. That I can show him, discuss with him, confront him, talk to him, shake him up, do anything. But how can I sit apathetically, watching the people around me not develop and not grow? That can't be. That's our Mishkan, that's our area of Mesilas Nefesh, that's where we work. Of course, after that it goes into a much bigger community. And you worry not only about your chaverim around the table that you're learning, but you worry about Klal Yisrael altogether in the same way. But how can one worry about Klal Yisrael when you couldn't even care about the guy sitting next to you? It's just not possible. And in conclusion, I just want to clarify that there's a major difference between social relationships and Beinodin L'Chaveira. Social relationships is that you're friendly with people you enjoy, in whose company you enjoy. Now there's nothing human about that. Animals also stick together in cliques. Animals that get on well together stick together, and animals that don't like each other keep away from one another. There's a tendency in the Beis HaMedrash and in the world altogether to withdraw from people one doesn't like. There's no chiv that you have to like anybody in the Beis HaMedrash. There's no mitzvah, thou shalt like your neighbor as yourself. There's no such mitzvah. You don't have to like anybody, but you have to love them. And there's a difference. Loving is Mesilas Nefesh. And the Ramban says it's not an emotion. We don't care about what emotion you have towards other people, because we can't instruct you to love people either. But to relate to people with Mesilas Nefesh, there is a chiv. Whether you like the person or you don't like the person, you've got to decide one thing. Are we together, either in Klal Yisrael, if we are big enough to conceive of that concept, which most of us are not, then let's bring it down to start off with to a small community. Are we learning Torah together? Is it Ochi b'mitzvahs? Is he my brother in mitzvahs? Are we going the same way? Are we trying to go along the same path? Are we paddling the same boat? If we are, I have a chiyuv of Mesilas Nefesh, I don't care how much I like him or don't like him. Imagine a ship going down in the water, and you get into a lifeboat and you start picking out the guys that you like. You'll save that one, you'll try and save that one because you like him. But this fellow who's clinging onto your boat, you're going to chop his fingers off. You don't like him. It's not shaykh such a thing. That's just not possible. But in our interpersonal relationships here, all of a sudden it is. I'll help the people I like. I'll have the people to my table who I like.
We're not asking for social relationships. That must be found in addition to within the Beis HaMidrash, outside the Beis HaMidrash. One can be friends with the whole world. One can have social circles and must have social circles. In other circles, other religious circles, non-religious circles, there's no restriction in social relationships. Goyim one can have social relationships with to certain degrees. There's no chiyuv that one's social relationships have to be the people from one's immediate environment. That mesiras nefesh, that has to be for one another. There's no mesiras nefesh for social friends either. But there has to be a mesiras nefesh for chaverim. Again, it's simply an understanding that one's friends are not decorations. They're not pictures on the wall. They're real people who have real problems and real ambitions. And one has to just decide, if we're not in the same canoe, we must go somewhere else. If it's impossible to be mesiras nefesh for these people, then I must go and learn my Torah somewhere else. But if I'm learning my Torah with these chaverim, if this is my chavrusa, or this is my chaver, or this is the guy who davens with me, or sits next to me at the table when I'm learning, or as far as I'm able to conceive of in terms of Klalus Yisrael, this is another Jew, or this is another Jew that is I'm responsible for, this is another member of my community, as far as you want to go and as far as you're capable of going. If he is your community, and you've decided that he is your community, there's a chiyuv of mesiras nefesh. That has to be. That's bein adam lechaveiro, and of course, it applies also to all the mitzvahs that we do and to all the Torah that we're learning. To learn kilacha yad, I'm now giving you an explanation of what I said in shul earlier this morning. This morning I just observed. The observation is that the Yiddishkeit is stagnant. I didn't want to say it in shul, but it's beginning to smell of stagnancy. It just becomes completely off-putting. Not that it's neutral. It actually becomes off-putting to ourselves, if you just look at it objectively, and to an outsider who walks in. It actually becomes off-putting because it's so stagnant. The reason that it's stagnant is because it's without mesiras nefesh. It doesn't have that conviction. It doesn't have that commitment. It doesn't have asher yidvenu liboy. It doesn't have lishmoy. We're not working for the ribono shel olam, and we're not working. We're putting in a bit of effort. We're busy painting up our homes. That's not what Yiddishkeit is. Torah to a Jew is like water is to a fish. Take him out and he's dead. The moment one understands that, the Torah is our oxygen, then one is able to understand the need for mesiras nefesh and to indulge in the mesiras nefesh with pleasure and with ahava.